Shalom Havarim. Hello, friends. Good to see you on this lovely fall morning. I usually start with some sort of a joke, and every now and then I have funny things that happen in my real life, so I tell real stories. And today's is one of those experiences. I had a story that I thought was worthy of sharing. And it's not one of those that just is laugh out loud kind of funny, but oh my goodness, I can't believe that really happened kind of funny. So if you don't give an audible laugh, I understand. You'll understand the situation here shortly. All right, it's fall. It's nearing Halloween time, and this is the time to play tricks and jokes and try to scare people. Am I right? I'm not alone, am I? Okay. So this week, in collaboration with unnamed people in my household, we decided to play a little prank on someone else in our household. And what we did was we have a rubber snake. Not a real one like Cadron has, but about this long, a rubber snake, about the same color as your snake. So it looks like a corn snake. Anyways, what I did was, I know you're getting into the details, I'll get there. What we did was we took some dental floss. I went to the dentist on Thursday, and they give you that little sample. Took some dental floss and wrapped it around the head of the snake, placed the snake in the kitchen cupboard where we keep our cereal, took the dental floss around to the outside of the cupboard and tied it to the handle. So when the door is opened, the snake comes slithering out. I did a video of the experience here. This is what it looks like. This is our dirty cupboards here in Stanton, Virginia. You can barely see the white dental floss tied to the handle. And when you open it, this is what happens. All right, so that was probably Thursday that I did that. In collaboration with other unnamed people in my household, we did that on Thursday. Forgot all about it. You think you know where it's going. No, no. Friday, Sonia's at work. The children are at school. I am here at the church doing my work for the church, and I get a text message from my neighbor, nice Lithuanian man, who says, I should have looked it up in the text. He's like, hey, dude. And he always calls me dude. I wish I could do a Lithuanian accent. It's so much better. Hey, dude, can we borrow an 8x8 pan? You know what's going to happen. I was just being neighborly. Well, sure, no one's home, but you can let yourself in the back door. The pans are by the refrigerator in the cupboard, which also happens to be that cupboard. He sends his wife over to out loud funny. He sends his wife over to get the pan, and moments later receive a text message, and she says, ha ha, nice snake. And that, my friends, has absolutely nothing to do with today's sermon, but it was the highlight of my week. Right? Well, I was told that somebody else found the snake while I was in the shower on Friday, and I missed that one as well. And I was also told that the next day she found it again and was still startled, and that I was told this morning that the snake needs to go. Anyways. And that's all the time we have for today, folks. Have a great day. All right, so you've heard this sermon before, folks. You've heard this text preached on every November. This is the story of the 10 lepers. Not to be confused with at Christmas time, we have the 10 leapers, the 10 lords of leaping. These are the 10 lepers. We talk about this almost every Thanksgiving because it lends itself wonderfully to this story about gratitude. And that is absolutely central to today's text. Gratitude is very important. And I want to preach that sermon in a month. So you can be grateful. You have to wait for only 1 month to hear the sermon on gratitude. Again, I'm not denying that this is about gratitude. I think that is the central point of today's text. And actually, I was looking this week on why would this be included in today's lectionary. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving in Canada. Thank you, Marlene. So that's probably why it is included, but today I want to look at something different. Today I'm going to look at identity. Oh, we just got real serious, folks. We're going to talk about identity today. Now, think about it. If I was to ask you, who are you? How would you start that conversation? How would you begin to tell me who you are? Imagine you meet somebody for the first time. If somebody comes to me, they say, tell me about yourself, Kevin. I usually start by what I do for work. I'm the pastor at Stanton Mennonite Church. Maybe the next thing you do is you go into describing your family. Well, I'm father to two, husband to one. You know, I don't know what people say that. Yes, husband to one. Aha, it's cute, right? And they're like, wait, Mennonite, husband to how many? No, that's the other M1. got a good story about that one too, right, Mr. Love? Anyways. Not Mormons, we're Mennonites. Anyways, get back on track. So how do we define ourselves? Sometimes we define ourselves based on what we are not. Or when we say what we are, it necessarily, by extension, says what we are not. Some people will say, I am a Republican. Well, therefore, you are not a Democrat. Or just by saying that I am a Mennonite, that means that I am not a Presbyterian or any other number of things. These are the ways we define ourselves, often by defining ourselves by what we are not. Now, our identities are absolutely real. I'm not saying that they are not important. What I want to say today is they are not the most important thing about us. Because these identities that are meant to divide us and identify us and define us can sometimes separate us. We all have one identity that I think is the most important identity. We are all beloved children of God. And I believe that when we start with that identity, not only for ourselves, but especially for other people, when we look at other people and say, you are a beloved child of God, it changes how we address one another. Why don't we just do that? Look at each other and say, you are a beloved child of God. I mean, seriously, I need a second to get a drink. All right. Let's get into our text today. What we're going to do today is we're going to break down this passage. We're going to walk through it. We're going to circle back to some Old Testament understanding of what's going on here. And then we're going to move into the 21st century and discuss how this is relevant to us today. So we're starting today with verse 12. And Jesus and his disciples, they're out for a walk. It says they're going to Jerusalem. And on that path, they're crossing along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as they're walking along that border, this happens. 10 people yell out, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Luke tells us that they yell this from a distance. Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And I'm thinking, that's just rude. Don't yell at the man. Go and talk to him face to face. Like, have a conversation. Well, what's going on here? Why can't they go and have a conversation? Luke tells us that they are suffering from leprosy. And there is a modern form of leprosy. It's known as Hansen's disease. But when the Bible uses this term leprosy, it's really just this generic term for a persistent skin disorder. It could be as bad as a rash that just doesn't go away. Or it could be as bad as like flesh-eating bacteria. You're losing your fingers and your toes are falling off. So these people have this particular or generic disease. They're calling out from a distance. So why are they yelling from a distance? Well, we find out all about leprosy in the passage that I'm sure you all love to quote so frequently. We find all the details in Leviticus chapter 13. You read that this morning. You're good? Okay, no, so I can just skim over that. Let's go back to Leviticus chapter 13, where we find out how it's decided who has leprosy and how they are to be treated. Leviticus chapter 13, there are 46 verses dedicated to pus, oozing sores, and the hair found inside of those sores, okay? So just before lunch, I encourage you to go read Leviticus chapter 13. Here's a few excerpts, just because I know we are getting close to lunchtime. Leviticus chapter 13, verses 1-3 say this. When anyone has a swelling or a rash or a shiny spot on their skin, that may be a defiling skin disease. they must be brought to Aaron, the priest, or one of his sons who is a priest. The priest is to examine the sore on the skin, and if the hair in the sore has turned white, and the sore appears to be more than skin deep, it is a defiling skin disease. When the priest examines that person, he shall pronounce them ceremonially unclean. Yeah, so that's kind of gross. But here's the thing, like what does that even mean here? This last section, this ceremonially unclean part. Well, we find what that means at the end of chapter 13 in verse 45 and 46. Anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt. So far they sound like a teenager. Cover the lower part of their face and cry out, unclean, unclean, as long as they have the disease. They are to remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside of the camp. So the reason these lepers are yelling out from a distance, covering their mouth probably, yelling out that they are unclean, is because they aren't allowed to come in contact with Jesus. They aren't allowed to come near. They must stay at a distance. They have to wear certain clothes. They have to wear their hair a certain way. They must keep this distance. And they can't even live in the same city as somebody who does not have leprosy. These people are outsiders. That is their primary identity in this story. And even today, what I say, we know them as the 10 lepers. Their identity is that of an outsider. Now, I don't want to be too hard on the Mosaic Law. I mean, this is given to the people for a reason. And I know it's for many of us, it's like that's absolutely terrible to force people who are different outside. But if we're honest, it probably has a medical purpose as well. If you get the flu, please don't go to work. Don't go to school. Don't send your kids to school if they have the flu. Homeschool doesn't it doesn't apply to you, right? You still get to go to school when you're sick. But anyways, there's a reason we don't send people to school when they're sick. That's because we don't want to spread it. And this disease, I assume the reason that these people were to be outside of the city to keep their distance from other people was to not spread this disease. So I want to say, let's at least be honest, there's a reason behind this. It's not just to be mean, it's not just to be exclusive, but it can be that. It can be very exclusive. People are not included in a circle. So let's go back to our passage for today. Verse 14. When Jesus saw them, that's the 10 lepers, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. I think that's a wonderful example of faith right there. Jesus says, all right, you've got this leprosy, you've got this disease, go show yourself to the priest. And it seems like as they turn, as they show faith, okay, we must go do this. As soon as they turn, they are cleansed. But now, of course, the question is, what are they doing here? Why are they even doing this whole going to show themselves to the priest? Well, that's because in Leviticus chapter 14, you have 30-some-odd chapters. Let me find that again. 30-some-odd verses, 32 verses, that lay out the procedure on how to be pronounced clean by the priest. It is an 8-day process. What all things do you think are included in being pronounced clean by the priest? Go ahead, throw out some ideas. What do you think they have to do? Bathe, that is one, yes. Anointed with oil. Thank you, Kadrin. I heard that. Fasting, I don't think is included. Maybe it is. Sacrificing animals. Also a part of the process. So it's an 8-day ordeal. And the most important thing is, well, it's maybe not the most important. The thing that caught my attention is you have to shave every last bit of hair on your body. It even specifies your eyebrows. You have to shave your eyebrows to be made clean after you have leprosy. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I mean, it's in the Bible. Surely there's a reason for it. I don't know what it is, but it's there. So that's why these nine, all 10 of them turn. They go to the priest But then we come to the story that we often lift up at Thanksgiving. Verses 15 and 16, one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back to Jesus, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Yeah, well, wait a second. So, what is his identity? He's a leper, but he's also a Samaritan. Let's go ahead and see what Jesus says first before I break that down a little bit more. Jesus responds, "Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" The emphasis is mine, but the word that Jesus, I didn't look into it. I think it's ethnos there. It's a reference to anybody that is outside of the main group of people. This is a foreigner. So not only is he an outsider because of his leprosy, in this group, he is an outsider. He's an outsider among outsiders. He doesn't even fit into his group of outcasts. Now, when I read this, I look at those men that turned and they went to be with the priest to start this process of being made clean or pronounced clean. You know what? I don't want to be too hard on them because they were doing what was required of them of the law. They were doing what Jesus said to do. Jesus said, go show yourself to the priest. They're actually doing what he said to do. The one that turned back, he wouldn't have been able to go into the temple. He wouldn't have been received by the priest. He was an outsider, even in his group of outsiders. Let's keep going. Jesus says to this outsider, he says, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Now, I don't like this translation. This is the NIV, the New International Version. This is from the Message, which is a interpretation of the scripture. The Message says, your faith has healed and saved you. The word that is used here, the faith has made you well, it is the Greek word sozo. Everybody say sozo. You have to say it like an angry man. Sozo. All right. And the reason I want you to notice that is this is a different word than is what is used to describe the healing of the 10 lepers that do turn back to the priest. This is a different word. And it's not just about being made well. Eugene Peterson says it's about being healed and saved. I think the better word is you have been made whole. This outsider, this double outsider, has now been recognized for his beloved nature. No longer is he a double outsider. Jesus is saying, my friend, your faith is a recognition of who you truly are. You are a beloved child of God. Your faith has made you whole. I read a fun book this week, and some of you might enjoy this one. This one was called The Lies That Bind. It's based on the title itself is based on the Christian hymn, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds. This is by a man named Kwame Anthony Appiah. Are you familiar with this one? Okay. This is when I saw you walk in. I'm like, oh, wait, no, human rights. McCall's going to love this one. All right. But now she can call me out on my on my stretching the truth. All right, we'll let it go. Kwame Anthony Appiah, I believe is how he says his name. Kwame Anthony Appiah was born in Ghana. His father is Ghanese, and his mother is British. This is a picture of Appiah. If you're like me and you don't have a lot of sense of what's going on in the world, you may not realize this, but does anybody here know any special interesting things about Ghana and Britain in their relation? Colonialism, thank you. Yes. Yeah, Ghana was colonized by Great Britain. So this man's father was colonized, his family was colonized by his mother's family. So his mother is a white British woman, his father a black Ghanese man. His father is also Methodist, his mother is Anglican. And he says, you know, a number of these things. Also, he says that whenever he gets in a taxi cab, fun game for him is see if the taxi cab driver can guess what nationality he is. Because he speaks with a British accent. He grew up, went to school in Britain, but he says he looks like he's from India, so he just really messes with people. They have no idea where he's from. And he says in some ways he feels like a citizen of the world. He calls himself a cosmopolitan man. The literal translation of cosmopolitan is a citizen of the entire world. But he also feels like he has no home. Because is he Methodist or is he Anglican? Is he black or is he white? Is he British or is he Ghanaian? In many ways, he just can't pinpoint who he is. And he writes this book, The Lies That Bind, and he talks about these different identities that we have. And he says these identities that we think are so important, they often aren't. He says there's so many times that if you look at what makes you who you think you are, these things are not as bound as we think they might be. For instance, when somebody says, Kevin, where are you from? I'm not sure how to answer that. And it probably depends on with whom I'm speaking. Because here I would say I'm from Ohio. But when I'm up in Washington, D.C., I would say I'm from Virginia. And if you think about that all the more, if you go back a couple hundred years ago, there was no Ohio. There was no Virginia. If I go abroad, I might say I'm from America. Go back a couple hundred more years and there was no United States of America. So if this is my primary identity based on where I was born and how I was raised, if you realize I'm an Ohioan by birth, a Virginian by choice, all because some dude with a crayon decided to draw a line in a certain place on a map. Interesting. Furthermore, what if I would have been born in my parents' or great-great-grandparents' home country? I consider myself Swiss German by descent. I don't even know what that means. Like, I can't pick one. Am I Swiss or am I German? I don't know. I'm a Christian of a particular flavor. I am a Mennonite in part because I grew up in northeastern Ohio among other Anabaptist groups. If I was born in Minnesota, might be Lutheran. Yeah. If I was born in New England, could be Congregationalist. What if I was born in Iraq or Iran? What if I was born in India? I don't know. Now, I'm not saying, again, that these identities don't matter. And that's, again, that's not what Appiah is saying. These identities, absolutely, they're real. They matter. But what he's saying is, don't ever allow these identities that are really more fluid than we might think they are to divide us. Don't ever stop looking at people as people who are beloved people loved by Jesus, because these people could be you. You're only separated by a few choices along the way. Even something that we think is so as important as how we vote, a Republican or Democrat, if you had grown up with a different set of friends or if you ran with a different set of friends now, you may vote differently. Again, these identities, they are important. But we should never allow these identities to keep us from seeing another person with human dignity, with value, as beloved people. Let's move it into the 21st century. 1 week ago, my last movement for this morning, we're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers. Nobody cares, I know. And that's okay, because this isn't actually about the game at all anyways. During this game, I don't know, it was probably on national television. I didn't watch it. Some people probably did. And you know when things get boring, what do they do with the cameras? They start scanning the crowds. Like, the game is not that interesting. Let's see who's here. This game was played in Arlington, Texas. It was the home game for the Cowboys. And the cameras are scanning through the crowd, and they go up to the luxury boxes. And this picture was seen. It was on national television. Right here. Of course, the first thing you notice is that Ellen has the new iPhone. It's got the three cameras on the back. No, this was, you see, this was just on TV. They showed the score. I guess Packers, did they win? Sure, I don't care. Doesn't matter. All right. This picture was shown on national TV. And almost immediately, there was backlash. There were people that were criticizing Ellen DeGeneres. If you don't know who these people are, on the right, this is Ellen DeGeneres. On the left, this is George W. Bush, the 43rd president of the United States. Sure, we'll go with that. President Bush was and is a conservative Republican. Ellen DeGeneres is a progressive liberal. She's an outspoken proponent of various rights that for people like LGBTQ communities. These are not, let me just say, these are not the kind of people you expect to see sitting together at a football game. And to be honest, I'm kind of surprised Ellen DeGeneres even went into Texas. Like, that's probably not the safest place for you. So what was I saying? Anyways, people start like taking to social media to criticize Ellen and saying things like, do you not realize all this guy has done? Do you not realize his stance on this issue or his stance on that issue? Do you not realize that he has been accused of war crimes and taking people into war, taking the United States into the war on terror, possibly making up this idea of weapons of mass destruction? Everybody was criticizing Ellen for going to a football game, which she seems to be very engaged in, going to a football game with George W. Bush. And the next day, she goes live on her television show, and this is her response. She says, here's the thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that we're all different. But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way you do. I mean be kind to everyone. It doesn't matter. I think Jesus said something like that, didn't he? Love your enemies. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you agree. It's not to say that it's not important, but how you interact with that person shouldn't be affected by whether or not you hold the same beliefs. Can you imagine from our story today, these 10 men are calling out to Jesus from afar. They're covering their mouth. They've got their disheveled hair and their torn clothes. 10 men yelling to Jesus, Lord, Master, have mercy on us. And Jesus looks out there and he says, you, and you will get healed today. You don't, because you're a Samaritan. No. I mean, it's almost comical to us. But how often do we do that? We don't show people who are different than us the same dignity, the same love, the same respect. You think Jesus and the Samaritan man had the same theological beliefs? No. Do you think that's going to keep Jesus from showing the love of God to that guy? No. And you want to know what else? This wasn't the first time George W. Bush has been seen with a liberal woman. Yeah. You might very much dislike at least one person in that picture. That's it. Shouldn't affect how you treat them. We can have differences of opinions. We can have very strong feelings and beliefs. If you can't go to a football game with somebody, that says something about you. And I think we need to keep moving in the sermon because we're going to be here too long. My friends, how do we define ourselves? Are you liberal? Are you progressive? Are you a Samaritan? Are you a Christian? Do these sorts of conversations bother you? That's okay. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to feel uncomfortable. I bet you that when Jesus uses these examples of Samaritans, that it made a lot of people uncomfortable in his day as well. But how many times do we see those who are on the outside of society, the outcasts, the tax collectors, the sinners? These are the people that seem to get it first, that seem to understand what Jesus is doing. Of the 9 people that turned back, maybe they were just following directions. I don't know. But there is one person that came back to Jesus. There was only one person that was said to be made whole. The other 9 were healed. The Samaritan was made whole. Jesus says elsewhere that it's the tax collectors and the prostitutes who are entering the kingdom of heaven first. I'm not encouraging anybody to be on the outside of society, to be an outcast. But what I'm noting is there's something about being on the outside that opens our eyes to a new way of seeing. A Samaritan man was the one who was made whole that day. And it was a progressive talk show host, so I'm lifting up as our example of how to treat one another today. So my advice for you today, friends, is be kind to one another, or in the words of Jesus, love one another. Let's pray. God, we thank you. You have made us different from one another. We vary greatly. We have been given these identities. Some of us are tall. Some of us are short. Some of us are white. Some of us are brown. Some of us are anywhere in between. And Lord, in some of those things, that there's so much beauty to be found. But Lord, when we start drawing lines and boundaries and divisions, we tend to consider other people just that, they are others. But you have showed us, Lord, that we are to show your love to all people. And yes, we will have very strong disagreements. And sometimes, Lord, there will be things in people's lives that we cannot endorse. But may we never stop showing them the love of Christ. It's in his name we pray. Amen.